ATC is go.
Pegasus is go.
ATC is go.
Copy, S is go.
Houston flight is go.
Polycom.
STM is go.
Safety comms is go.
STU is go.
LRD is go.
SRO is go.
CDI is go.
Launch director, NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Site Patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people.
On RSPRadio1.com. Welcome to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. It's Tuesday night, the 26th of March. Welcome to it. Hello, Diane.
Hello, Craig, and how are you?
Well, I'm good now that it quit snowing.
Ah, okay, finally.
we're hoping that was the last blast of winter up here in north central Nebraska, but the worst of it was we had a layer of glazed ice underneath the snow.
Ooh, that's like a little ice skating rink under there.
They had to close down over 150 miles of I-80 yesterday, mm-hmm. or Monday, and yeah, just, I guess, Sunday night and Monday. But that, as I understand it, has all reopened, so traffic is flowing again, but geez, what a mess.
Oh, okay.
Hey, we got a lot of stuff to talk about tonight. Diane, you're talking about having to make a Solomon-like decision in a time of war.
Yes, and it looks like that decision has kind of already been decided.
Well, no surprise, but we're going to get the details from Diane in about 30 minutes. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about socialism by green energy mandates.
Okay.
Well, those are the two big topics we're covering tonight, but of course, we're going to start with some quick hitters, and let's start with the bridge collapse in Baltimore. And it's not really a collapse. It got hit by a cargo ship.
Right.
This all happened at about 1 o'clock this morning, I think.
1:30 exactly.
Okay.
And the reason I know that is because in one of my insomnia nights, I had Fox on, and at 1:30, they broke into their regular program and said there has just been a bridge collapse in Baltimore.
And I'll tell you what, that is an enormous mess, mm-hmm. and that's going to take quite a bit of time to clean up. But I just got to say, you know, going through social media today, I was shocked, really, at all the people that are claiming that the bridge had been destructed, like you'd bring down a building with, you know, controlled demolition and all that kind of stuff. And, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, come on, people, you know, you can do better than that. I put up a meme this afternoon.
It's a fun meme.
And I just said, frankly, I'm amazed by the number of people who routinely post pictures of their pets and selfies that are also maritime experts. Obviously, the bridge was racist. The harbor pilots were DEI hires. The earth is flat. And this was all Trump's fault.
I love that post. It's a great post, especially, folks, since I think both Craig and I can guarantee you that this is going to turn out to be an accident, pilot error, and coupled with electrical errors and navigation errors and just errors in general. This was not a deliberate act. This was not an act of terrorism.
Unfortunately, I mean, fortunately, I think you're right, but unfortunately, I think a lot of people on our side of the aisle, the same people who insisted several years ago that we were all going to wind up being housed in empty Walmarts, are not going to believe you.
Well, you know, whether they want to believe me, whether they want to believe you, facts are facts are facts. And the videos prove certain things. Maritime law proves some other things. This was a terribly unfortunate accident that it looks like have claimed six lives. But this was not a deliberate act by any means.
I mean, I'll just go on record right now and say it's amazing to me that only six people were killed.
I mean, that bridge is not that heavily traveled. That bridge gets about 30,000 crossovers a day, but not at 1:30, 1:15, 1:30, you know, that area in the morning. Well, so they're very lucky that this wasn't, let's say, 5 hours later when people were heading to work. It could have been hundreds of deaths.
Well, and from what I understand, there were some workers there that literally jumped out in the middle of the road and stopped cars as soon as the Mayday call was made. And that probably saved a lot of people. In one of the videos that I saw, you can see cars and a couple of big trucks going across that bridge, literally maybe less than a minute before that collision occurred. So,
yes,
you know, it was a perfect storm of horribly unfortunate circumstances. But we're going to keep an eye on it. We're going to let you know what we hear on Tuesday's show. Tuesday show, because folks, this Friday, we're taking the day off.
Right. It's Good Friday. And we respect that it's a holy day for a lot of people. And, you know, enjoy your weekend from Good Friday through Easter.
Yeah. Let's talk about Donald Trump's big win in court. He's had actually a pretty good week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he did. And this whole entire thing with this fine, some legal experts are finding under the Constitution that this is not only unheard of, but borders on the illegal. Since when does anybody who is doing an appeal have to put up that kind of bond?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of nuts when you think about it. I mean, the original amount was, you know, literally almost $500 million.
Right.
That got reduced on Monday morning down to $175 million. And while that still seems like a lot of money, and it is, it's a lot better than $500 million.
I think it should have been thrown out completely. He's not running anywhere. He's not going to leave and skip out with anything.
No, he's not P. Diddy Combs.
Right. Oh, God, what a joke that is.
But here's the thing. A lot of legal experts are saying that this may be in direct violation of the Eighth Amendment where it comes to excessive fines. And, you know, now the prosecution is going to try to make the case that this wasn't a fine. Okay.
Right.
But, you know, the problem I think they're going to have with it, and if I was the Trump attorney team, one of the points I would try to make is this is certainly a fine because nobody was hurt. These are not reparations for money's lost because nobody lost money. Banks that were doing business with Trump, the insurance companies, nobody lost money. In fact, the banks came in and testified that everything was fine, it was all done according to Hoyle, and they would love to do more business with Donald Trump.
Yeah. What this actually is a victimless crime. And crime is only used because the case. You know, it's a criminal case. This is absolutely ridiculous. The man is running for president. Whether you like him or not, he's running for president. He's got the nomination. What, did they think he's going to really skip out on, you know, skip the country?
I mean come on, that's, folks. That's
You've
got to
use common sense here.
You know, and so he says he's going to go ahead and pay the $175 million and appeal the case.
Right. And
I think he stands a decent chance on appeal, but of course it all depends on, you know, the judges when it comes
You're
to the
appeal. You're forgetting where the trial is going to be,
Yeah, exactly. You know, you gotta, you know, but I'll tell you what, Letitia James has to be eating crow.
Yes, she does.
She was all ready to go put padlocks on Trump Tower and a whole bunch of other things. She had, she was actually licking her lips over the idea of procuring Mar-a-Lago. Doesn't look like any of those things are going to happen. But adding to Trump's good week, Truth Social went public today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that put $3 billion in his pocket.
The problem with that, because it is on the stock market, it could go very, very well. And, you know, people will buy into it. People will get shares of it, whatever. But if he loses in November, it's going to come crashing down. So, you know, I don't even put that into any equation of what he's facing at all, because I don't think it plays any part in it.
Well, no, and I'm not saying it does. All I'm saying is it put $3 billion in his pocket.
Yeah. Well, it's not there yet. It has to go through certain legalities and whatever. But I look more at this entire case as a sham. This is a political witch hunt.
Oh,
that's
it is.
All that is. And one by one, the layers of the witch hunt are being exposed. Now, however, as good as this was for him, he also got an April 15th court date.
Right.
Don't forget that. He did not want that before the election. So right. I would say he had an 85% good day and a 15% type of day.
Well, you know, you ask anybody that you know, understands these things, and they'll say, you know, they'll take an 85% win over a 100% loss every day.
Of course. Of course.
But just, you know, it's been, I mean, here it is. It's only Tuesday, and it's already been an interesting week in Donald Trump's world.
Yeah, it's been interesting. But, you know, something, I think all of this stuff, and rightly so, is taking a toll on him physically. How could it not? No. I'm not saying anything bad about that. It would take a toll on anybody. But if there's one thing I'd like to say, you know, he needs to tone down the me rhetoric.
Yeah, good luck with that.
I know. It really needs to be toned down, because he's got to get, there's still polls out there, that 25% of Republicans are not voting for him.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll wait and see what happens in November. But there's a saying about leopards and spots that comes to mind.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but he might get a little bit of some of those 20-25% back with RFK Jr.'s announcement today.
Well, yeah, let's talk about that, shall we? Jr. came out today and announced who his VP running mate is going to be. Sorry, football fans, it's not Aaron Rodgers. Sorry, old-time wrestling fans, it's not that nut from Minnesota, Jesse Ventura. Sorry, Dirty Jobs fans, it wasn't Mike Rowe.
Right. who it is. Her name is Nicole Shanahan, and she was married for a few years to one of the tech founders. Wasn't it
Google?
Was it Google? Yeah. But what she is, she's a progressive activist. She's 38 years old. She has contributed to far-left George Soros-funded candidates, including LADA George Gascon. She is a pro-abortion activist, big time, a green energy loon, climate change loon. She is just the epitome of the progressive far left. What he did with this vote is he is pandering to women who are pro-abortion. He's pandering to the young voters, almost like the Democrat version of Ramaswamy voters. This is the worst possible choice he ever could have made, because I personally thought when he announced that, hey, maybe he's going to be more like his uncle, a moderate Democrat. By that, I mean JFK. But he has totally destroyed the few things I did support him on. He was anti-vax, the COVID vax. He very, very pro-Israel and their right to defend themselves. I mean, I thought he was very good on those things. But when you pick somebody like this, any of the Never Trumpers who were going to support him, you really need to look twice at that.
Maybe three or four times. So what, we're going to put Diane down as a maybe.
No, I am not voting for RFK Jr. Not going to happen, folks.
You know, I said from the get-go when he said, hey, I'm going to run, I thought, you know, this guy's a lunatic. He is a liberal. You know, yeah, he had a couple of things that, you know, like you say, the Israel thing and the vax thing, where I agreed with him. But, you know, even a blind squirrel can find a nut every once in a while. And
yeah, but I never considered him a loon. He did some very good things when he took on Monsanto. He fought for the Clean Water Act. And he did do some, as a lawyer, he was one of the lawyers involved in those things. He did do some good things. He really presented himself as a more moderate Democrat. But you know, it turned out he's nothing of the sort.
No. I said from the word go, this is liberal. And, you know, he confirmed that this morning when he announced his pick. People were worried. A lot of Republicans were worried that, you know, RFK Jr. might, you know, siphon away some votes from Donald Trump. After this pick, I don't think that's going to happen. I think he stands a better chance of siphoning votes away from Joe Biden now. Because this progressive, you know, woman that he's picked, you know, the people on the left, the voters on the left, who don't think Biden is right and can't stand Kamala Harris, they're going to look at this and go, you know what, this could work.
Well, her stance on the illegals, I have been reading articles about her today, but I've seen both articles saying two different things. Some of the articles are saying she's pro-amnesty for illegals. Other sites are saying, no, she's not pro-amnesty. She agrees we need to tighten it. But there's no clear-cut thing. And when that happens, time has proven that usually when they try to cover something, it's because they're way to the left. And right. And the thing, especially with the border, is not sitting well with more moderate Democrats. So all I know is this was the worst pick he could have ever picked.
Yeah, she's nuttier than a squirrel turd.
Yeah.
I mean, she just is. Finally, we need to devote some time to this. There was a big vote in the UN on a resolution to demand an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. This vote took place at the UN Security Council. The United States has veto power in the Security Council. So they held the vote, and the U.S. abstained. That means the motion carried.
Right. This is a stab in the back, and I can say it because I'm not saying it on Facebook. God forbid, you know, they consider stab in the back against their community standards. But what this was a direct stab in the back to Netanyahu, to Israel, and to Jews everywhere. Hamas is a group of savage terrorists who committed god-awful atrocities right out of Hitler-type playbooks. And here it is. In the beginning, Biden comes on strong. We need to support Israel and this and that. Well, I guess his puppet master reined him in and set him straight on a few things. And now we have a man that just is helping to dig the knife deeper and deeper.
Well, by abstaining from the vote, you're actually supporting Hamas. Mm-hmm. And that's what the U.S. did. You know, nobody's happier about this than the ilk of AOC and the squad and Chuckle Schumer and,
you know,
a bunch of those fools. But, you know, to his credit, Bibi Netanyahu pretty much gave Biden the finger.
Well, he canceled a visit that was going to be by his senior advisors to the White House. And he said, flat out, it's because you abstained from the UN vote. And he, this group actually was the delegation of conservative minister Gideon Saar, and he's resigning, and that his party is leaving the emergency government over this.
That's pretty big.
Yes.
You know, now I wonder if Netanyahu himself will still take up the invitation to come and speak to the joint session of Congress that was floated out there a couple of days ago.
Well, I'll talk about that in the next half hour.
I'm, you know, I'm just thinking, given this vote, if he comes, he'll read Biden the Riot Act.
Oh, yes, he will.
You know,
and he will hold nothing back.
And good for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's really honestly the way I feel about it. You know, the United Nations is, I mean, you call them useless. I call them the United Nations of thugs, thieves, and despots. Well, they, you know, by demanding this ceasefire, and then they came out yesterday and said that Israel is engaged in genocide.
Yeah. Really? No, Israel is engaged in rightful war. Remember, October 6th, there was peace. October 7th, Hamas started a war. Well, when you go to war with somebody, you better be prepared for the consequences. And personally, I wish Bibi would go in and just level all of Gaza. Let the Arab countries, their brethren, take them in. Let Abdullah take his own people in, because the Palestinians are technically Jordanians, and let them take responsibility for their own people. Israel just wants to live in peace, but everybody's doing everything to make it where they can't.
You know, you can only poke the lion with a sharp stick so many times.
Right.
And then the lion's going to be fed up with you. And that's what happened to Hamas.
Yes.
The situation right now as it stands, as I understand it anyway, the Rafah offensive is still planned
It's going forward, yes.
Yeah, and isn't that supposed to take place as soon as Rama Lama Ding Dong is over?
I believe so. I believe so. They're already in there to a limited degree, but they're going to clean out all of Hamas. And then today, Bibi said, we'll deal with what has to be done after Hamas is no longer a threat. Yep. And the problem is, Hamas now today also came out and said, we're not making any deals. This is what we want, and we want this. We want a ceasefire. We want thousands of Palestinian prisoners released in exchange for a few hostages, which basically means most of them are already gone. Those 1,000 Palestinians that they, or the exact words were upward of 1,000. What that means is those thousands are new Hamas members in waiting.
Exactly.
Bibi's not stupid.
No, he's not going to fall for that.
No.
Saw a headline the other day claiming that Gazans are on the verge of starvation during Ramadan. And I'm thinking, well, isn't Ramadan when they're supposed to be fasting anyway?
Their version of fasting. Fasting means, folks, you don't eat. Ramadan means you don't eat between breakfast and dinner. I don't call that fasting.
No, it's not.
It's not.
But, you know, I mean, for a headline to proclaim they're on the verge of starvation during Ramadan, I thought, well, how are they even notice?
Right. Right. It's a bad situation all the way around, because the Palestinians were offered a version of statehood by Israel. They turned it down, so they have nobody to blame but themselves.
Well, and for all these yahoos that are demanding a ceasefire immediately, you know, ceasefire after ceasefire after ceasefire, all were broken by Hamas. All were broken right. by the Palestinians. None of them were broken by Israel. So they've had their ceasefires over and over and over again, and they have violated each and every one of them. So those right. that are calling for an immediate ceasefire now need to sit down and shut up.
Well, you know what? I have a good idea. If they're all starving over there, why don't AOC and Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar and Presley, I can't remember her first name right now, why don't they all, you know, gather up some of their money, their great money they're making in Congress for being troublemakers, gather up all that, gather up their people, pack some food bags, and go over there and stay there.
Well, that might be too much to ask for. You know, here's the other headline I saw the other day. The aid packages that were being sent by the U.S. to Gaza
mm-hmm.
had MREs in the meals ready to eat. It's the stuff our military eats.
Right. Yes, that's true.
And the Palestinians didn't like them.
Well, that's just too damn bad.
Yeah, so look, we're sending you food. If you don't like it, shut up.
Right.
If you're so starving. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're that starving, you'll eat it. And the military MRIs are not terrible things.
No. I mean, are they four-star dining experiences? No.
No.
But if you're complaining because you don't have any food and you're being sent food and you don't like it, then I don't want to hear from you.
Right.
Pretty simple.
Yeah. Yeah. And even some of the aid, not all of it, but some of the aid that's getting in is still being appropriated by Hamas fighters and not going to the starving people.
Yeah. Go figure, right?
Yeah.
It's not like we're sending them powdered Brussels sprouts. I mean, that I could understand turning down. It's not what we're sending them.
No.
All right, so we're here at the bottom of the hour. That means we're going to have to take a quick break. 30 minutes from now, I'm talking about socialism by green energy mandates. But when we come back from the bottom of the hour break, Diane has it with having to make a Solomon-like decision in a time of war. Stay with us, folks. There's more Right Side Patriots after this.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Hi guys, Diane Sorey from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out the National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen from the National Patriot, Diane Sorey from the Patriot Factor, getting you through the Tuesday night show. If you miss any part of it, go to RSPRadio1.com tomorrow morning, click the podcast button, and have at it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The situation over in Israel is, you know, we were just talking about it a couple of minutes ago. There's a lot more to it than what, yes, a lot of people think, and especially when you look at the demands being made by the Palestinians, and you look at what's at stake for Israel. So, Diane, you put together an op-ed, having to make a Solomon-like decision in a time of war.
And let me start with this quote. "Please, my Lord, give her the baby. Just don't kill him." That's from the Old Testament, 1 Kings 3:16-28. It's a story from the old times, a story about a solution proposed to what was truly a heart-wrenching decision. Most know the words I quoted from the story of King Solomon and his so-called baby-splitting decision involving two mothers fighting over who was one baby's rightful mother and thus to whom he belonged. And with but one woman alone speaking the simple words, "Just don't kill him," a mother's love was exposed, and with it came the truth as to who was the baby's true mother. A long-ago king, a seeker of truth, helped to expose the wisdom and righteousness that lies only within truth itself. A lesson as relevant today as it was so many millennia ago. And while today's circumstances are obviously quite different, the righteousness in not just knowing what is truth, but being able to separate truth from lies, I believe lies within the very soul of today's modern-day seeker of truth, as in Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, the man I consider to be one of the world's last great statesmen. And only when his truth is accepted as truth by all can justice finally be served, even if it means pushing aside the naysayers, pushing aside, in this case, not just those referring to the discourse surrounding the war Israel is now fighting, but pushing aside those who willfully, willingly, and maliciously try to turn Netanyahu's truth into lies. Simply, Netanyahu's truth is the conduit by which facts coupled with actions taken have proven that Hamas's goal, that Iran's goal, is to annihilate the Jewish state of Israel, wipe them and all those of the Jewish faith off the face of the map, no matter where they might live. And Craig, that truth envelops within it the fact that Israel is not just fighting for its right to exist, but for freedom itself. And said freedom is not just for Israel, but for the entirety of the Western world, which too is at stake. And while Netanyahu understands this all too well, he is wise enough to know that circumstances alone, at times, determines whether justice, hence truth, will or will not be served.
You know, the situation over there is very complex. It's probably a lot more complex than a lot of people think. And not only that, but Israel, the Jews, and Palestine, those aren't the only two players that stand to lose a lot in this war if Israel isn't backed fully.
Exactly. And right now, Israel is engaged in a war between civilized men versus the savages. And yet Netanyahu sadly sees unholy alliances being forged by the most unlikely of players. For not only some of Israel's long-held allies digging the proverbial knife deeper into her back, but so too are some who claim themselves to either be of the Jewish faith or have family members and or friends who are. And I think this not only hurts Israel and Israelis, but Jews and Christians, yes, Christians everywhere. For while Israel is now the outward enemy, know that Christians are surely next on the savages' bloodlust list. And with many Christian groups bravely showing outward support for Israel, the common ground between the two faiths makes for a common enemy in the eyes of those wishing to do harm. Thankfully, there is a key commonality shared between these two great faiths, as in the overwhelming will to survive. And no one knows the true strength embedded within the will to survive better than Bibi Netanyahu. The man now faced with a King Solomon-like decision of his own. And Craig, it's all because longtime allies and friends are now doing the unspeakable, not in the name of peace, but for political expediency alone. Let me explain with but two key examples.
Yeah, it's like I said, this is a very complex situation, and the ramifications are dire. Mm-hmm. When you start to break it down, as you're about to do, folks, I think you're going to see exactly what Diane's talking about, not only in how this has played out both before and now, but also in the ramifications if we don't stay on the right side of this issue.
Wait, hold on one sec. Okay, example one, Joe Biden. When Israel's war with Hamas started on Saturday, October 7th, 2023, we saw for a brief moment our country and our leaders uniting behind the Jewish state as the atrocities committed upon innocents simply could not be denied, even by Biden. And with memories of the Holocaust never to be forgotten, nor ever to be erased, the visuals released of what was done to innocent men, women, and children, some but a few months old, was undeniable proof that pure evil does indeed still walk the earth. And so we as a nation, together with the civilized world, did rightfully align ourselves on the side of Israel. That is, until said tangible proofs started being manipulated and twisted in the minds of anti-Semites everywhere, twisted to such a degree that innocent victims became collective perpetrators of but a self-perceived wrong, while Hamas terrorists became the liberal media's darlings, supposedly just fighting those who denied them a homeland. Lies told, lies believed by so many, even here in our own country, as we bore witness to the aforementioned Joe Biden of October 7th, the Joe Biden who unequivocally supported Israel, turning into the very man who just days ago had the U.S. submit a draft resolution to the U.N. calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, a ceasefire tied to the release of Israeli hostages. Hostages even Biden knows might no longer be alive. And besides, this proposed ceasefire is but another in a long list of past ceasefires, ceasefires that did nothing but give Hamas time to regroup, rearm, and fight on yet again. And this comes on top of Biden's announcement of a few weeks ago that the U.S. military will start building an emergency pier in Gaza, thus caving to the demands of pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel supporters here in the U.S., caving solely in hopes of not losing their vote come this November. And Biden knows well that not only is this pier building a large-scale and dangerous military undertaking for the U.S., but he also knows that it's an attempt to break a siege enforced not by an enemy, but by our ally Israel, a siege done solely in the name of self-preservation. And yet Biden still claims that this is being done simply to allow for the flow of humanitarian aid into Gaza. Never mind, Craig, the well-known fact that Hamas continues to steal the aid currently arriving in Gaza. And that includes humanitarian aid from Israel itself, as well as aid from both our government and private humanitarian aid organizations that is airdropped in to Gaza.
All right. So I guess maybe what you need to do at this point is kind of sum up what the Biden angle on this is, and then get into the second example, which, you know, if Biden's not bad enough doing what he's doing right now, you got the leader of the Senate that's just as bad.
Right. Well, first for the Joe Biden thing. Simply, it's my opinion that Joe Biden will continue to dance on the orchestrated strings of his puppet master Barack Obama, the man whose personal hatred for Benjamin Netanyahu, coupled with his hatred for Israel and the Jewish people, is the true director of this hopefully vote-garnering yet ever so dangerous operation itself. Now, example number two, Chuck Schumer. A total disgrace, as he has proven himself to be a Jew who, while claiming to be a supporter of Israel, is anything but. Recently stating in a Senate floor address that Netanyahu's government, quote, no longer fits the needs of Israel after October 7th, Schumer went on to state that, quote, the Israeli people are being stifled right now by a governing vision that is stuck in the past, unquote. Untruth spoken, not only added to by his closing words that, quote, at this critical junction, I believe a new election is the only way to allow for a healthy and open discussion-making process about the future of Israel at a time when so many Israelis have lost their confidence in the vision and direction of their government, end quote. Sorry, Schumer, but it's you and your Israel-hating, Hamas-condoning Democrat cronies in Congress who have lost confidence in Netanyahu's direction, for his direction is the antithesis of your party's no longer veiled support for Israel's enemy or for its Hamas-supporting populace. And it's your words alone, words that your, quote, heart breaks at the loss of so many civilian lives in Gaza, end quote, civilians which 65%+ outwardly supported then and still support now Hamas's attack on Israel, that have questioned a sovereign government's future, a future Israelis alone must decide, not a bleeding heart liberal like you. In fact, House Speaker Mike Johnson said that Schumer's call for a new election in Israel is both, quote, highly inappropriate and just plain wrong for an American leader to play such a divisive role in Israeli politics while our closest ally in the region is in an existential battle for its very survival. We need to be standing with Israel, end quote. Craig, I so agree with the speaker's words. And might I add that not only is it wrong, but in a way, Schumer's words, in my opinion, border on the treasonous, for what he is actually doing in a roundabout way is calling for the overthrowing of an ally's sovereign government.
I'm not even sure he's calling for it in a roundabout way. I think it was pretty, you know, bald-faced, you know, the way he did that, and especially doing it from the floor of the Senate to make it even more official. You know, right. Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, is 100% right. But thankfully, he wasn't the only voice that came out in opposition to Chuck Schumer.
No, not at all. Netanyahu himself stood strong in calling Schumer to task via a video call with Senate Republicans in which he stated that he and Israel would press on with the war in Gaza. My translation, the war will not only rightfully continue on with Israel's push into Rafah, thus eliminating what Bibi has called, quote, the remnant of Hamas battalions there, but his strong words of defiance showed just how weak a president Joe Biden is on the world stage. And after the call, Schumer dared to add insult to injury by declining Netanyahu's request to address the Senate Democrat caucus, with Schumer's excuse being that he did not believe that Netanyahu's address would happen in a nonpartisan manner. And hearing that House Speaker Mike Johnson said he will invite Netanyahu to address Congress, quote, I would love to have him come in and address a joint session of Congress. We'll certainly extend that invitation, end quote, were his words. But as I was writing this, it was not clear yet if that invitation had yet been extended, or if it has been, there's been no reply to date from Netanyahu himself. But the bottom line is that Chuck Schumer is playing political games with the lives of Israelis in order to score political points with Palestinian supporters, anti-Israel and anti-Semitic sorts here at home, which really is as vile and low as one can get. But Craig, this is exactly what you would expect from Chuck Schumer, a man who will not only do but say anything to help his old buddy Obama garner what would be his fourth term in office.
All right. So can you kind of wrap this up by taking us back to the very beginning of this op-ed where you talked about King Solomon and the choice he had to make and how it relates to what's going on in Israel today?
Absolutely. And so as I was writing this, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu was still facing not only a rightful continuation of this war, a war for Israel's very survival, but his having to make a true Solomon-like decision as well. And with the families of those still being held hostage, that is, if they are not already dead, the situation itself has become somewhat of a numbers game. How so? Because the question that must be answered is, are the lives of 100 or so hostages, again being if any are still alive, worth the risk of this war expanding into a regional conflict and possibly beyond? Do the lives of the very few justify the likely deaths of so many, or must the few be sacrificed so that millions of others might live? A question for the ages, a question that can only be answered as history itself unfolds. How heavy Netanyahu's heart must be right now, but in my heart I know that whatever decision he makes will be the right decision for both Israel and those of the Jewish faith. I stand united with Benjamin Netanyahu. I always have and always will, for he is a modern-day Solomon, and the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob will be the one
guiding his hand. Case closed.
Okay, so I guess maybe the question that needs to be asked at this point, in your mind, in your opinion, does Netanyahu sacrifice the possibly still alive, but not confirmed still alive hostages to finish this war, or does he make the opposite decision? What, in your opinion, do you think he's going to wind up doing?
What I think he's going to wind up doing, first, he's going to go into Rafah heavily. He's going to try his best, and the IDF are going to try their best to get whatever hostages are alive, if any are alive, out of there. They're not just going to go in and just level and kill anything without searching for those hostages. I think in the end, and I'm sorry to say this, while they might get one or two, if any are still alive, I think he's going to have to make that decision to just level the whole place. And in doing so, he has saved many, many, many lives.
Well, and it's
my guess.
You know, I think that's the appropriate decision to make. How would you feel if he went the other direction? How would you feel if he said, okay, I'll release upwards of 1,000 Palestinian prisoners? I mean, would that change your opinion that he'll do the right thing?
He said today that's not going to happen because he knows these are the future Hamas fighters. He's already said that's not happening.
Well, and, you know, what a lot of people don't understand, because they don't have the contacts you and I have, they haven't researched this the way you and I have for literally decades. You know, people don't really quite understand the intelligence network that Israel has, especially with Mossad.
Right.
You know, if there are hostages left alive, Israel probably has a pretty good idea exactly where they are. And if they had that idea, they would go in and get them.
Yeah. That's why I think the only thing that will happen first is the first battalions that go in will be looking for those hostages. But personally, I think if any were alive, I think Hamas has deliberately executed them at this point because they know that they're done.
Well, and you can't discount the fact that Hamas and the Palestinians, but, you know, Hamas specifically, uses humans as shields. And this is why they have so many military installations in places like schools and hospitals and apartment complexes. They do that because they don't really care about human life, not even human life that's on their side, much less, obviously, human life on Israel's side. I mean, if they did, if they had any care at all, they wouldn't have done what they did on October 7th.
Yes. Yes.
You know, what I'm saying, Diana, some of these hostages could have been killed in strikes because they were literally being used as human shields.
Right. Right. And I believe it was yesterday or the day before, one of the hostages that had been released died of their injuries. And just today, I read a report, one of the girls that was gang raped came out and absolutely describe the atrocities that were done.
Yeah.
So these are barbarians that do not deserve to walk the earth with civilized men, as far as I'm concerned.
And you point out, and rightfully so, in the op-ed, that 65% of Palestinians back Hamas. Now, that means that, you know, 35% don't.
Right.
But, you know, nonetheless, Hamas was elected to lead the Palestinians. And, you know, the 35% really haven't done much of anything to stop them.
No, they've done nothing. And just because the 35% don't support them now doesn't mean that 35% didn't support them when they came into power.
Well, and you know, it's not like Hamas is wearing uniforms, so you can't really tell one from the other. You can't tell a Hamas soldier, use your air quotes, from an innocent civilian.
Yeah, and I'm going to say something now that some people might not like when hearing it first. But when you think about it with common sense here. The textbook in Palestine do not show Israel on the map. They show Israel as Gaza, whatever. Their children are indoctrinated from birth, basically, to hate Jews, to hate Israel. Israel must be destroyed. And it's all based on the Levant has to extend down and whatever. What people don't understand, and when I see the pictures of the Palestinian children, of course I feel bad for them. But then, I feel bad for them up to a point. Mm-hmm. They've been indoctrinated. These children are the future Hamas fighters.
Well, they've been taught nothing but hatred their entire lives. Right. I mean, you know, you see this going on in the schools in that area with kids that are 4 or 5 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't change them. You can't change them. Now, I'm not talking babies. You know, they have to learn the hatred. But when a kid reaches a certain age, the indoctrination, the laying of the indoctrination is complete. It would be very, very hard to change them.
Yeah.
It's a terrible situation, what has happened there. But honestly, this is the Palestinians' own fault and their Arab brethren for never helping them.
They started this war, but Netanyahu's going to finish it.
Yes.
I mean, that's really what it comes down to. Folks, you can find Diane's op-ed under the title Having to Make a Solomon-like Decision in a Time of War at either her blog, thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, or at rspradio1.com. Either way, you can get the link.
Greg, let me add one thing. In the op-ed, I have Chucky Schumer's full speech of what he said about Israel, the war, Netanyahu. And I also have the full reply by Benjamin Netanyahu.
Yeah, those are, you know, two videos that you need to watch. Mm-hmm. You know, to fully understand what Netanyahu is responding to, you've got to watch the Chuck Schumer video, no matter how distasteful that might be.
Very distasteful.
I mean, you know, it just is. It was one of the most remarkably stupid things I've ever heard said on the floor of the Senate.
Yeah. Well, he's getting a lot of feedback from it, including the Democrats that do support Israel. He's getting it from them too.
And rightly so. But you know what? I don't think he cares.
He cares either.
He made his pro-Hamas stance very public from the floor of the Senate, and I think no matter what anybody says to him, it doesn't matter really who it is, he's going to stand by it.
I agree with you. As bad as that is, I agree with you, because these leftist liberal loons, they just don't use common sense for anything.
The anti-Semitism runs deep.
Yes, it does.
I mean, that's really what it is. Folks, go to Diane's blog, thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, or rspradio1.com. Either way, you can get the link to the article, and we hope you share it everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
All right, with that, we've hit the top of the hour. We have to take another quick break. One more segment to go. When we come back, I'm talking about socialism by green energy mandates. Stay with us. There's more Right Side Patriots after this.
Hey guys, Diane Sori from the Patriot Factor on the patriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out the National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sori. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen and Diane Sori getting you through Tuesday night's show. And once again, if you miss any part of it, go to rspradio1.com tomorrow morning, click the podcast button. This show in its entirety and all the others are just going to be sitting there waiting for you.
Yes.
All right, so last week came as no great surprise, but still an idiotic move. Joe Biden signed off on yet some more mandates, and, anybody that looks at these things has to come out scratching their head, you know, which is why the Democrats never read them, because, you know, they don't care. Mm-hmm. But when you break it down, when you look at it, what it really comes out to be is what I titled this commentary, Socialism by Green Energy Mandates.
Okay.
Last week, Joe Biden signed off on an absurd mandate that would require half of all new cars sold starting in 2030 to be electric vehicles. And that percentage goes up by up to, I should say, 56% of all light duty car sales will be battery electric, and another 13% will be hybrid by 2032. Now, the mandate forces automakers to rapidly curb the emissions of greenhouse gases, hydrocarbons, nitrogen, oxides, and particulate matter by a staggering 7.2 billion metric tons over the course of the program, which will be in effect through 2032. The idea is to make gas-powered vehicles either so expensive, unavailable, or both, that Americans will be forced by government mandate to purchase electric vehicles. But there are problems, big problems. U.S. automakers are going to lose billions of dollars and tens of thousands of jobs in the process. American consumers don't want these electric cars and they can't afford them. And we don't have the infrastructure to support the mandate. So, why do this? Biden is doing this out of desperation because he and the liberals are bleeding voters, and they are pandering to the fringe liberal bloc trying to win them back. They can't run on their achievements because they don't have any, and they can't run on the success of their domestic policies because those policies are abject failures. Even their lunatic woke agenda based on DEI is falling apart and has shown itself to be completely hollow of any common sense reality. Biden's poll numbers are dropping faster than his IQ, and both young voters and minority voters are feeling the repercussions of Bidenomics in very real and tangible ways. And add to that, Obama knows that freshly indoctrinated voters, age 18 to 24, believe, Diane, that the only way to change the weather is to vote Democrat and throw taxpayer money at the thermostat.
Well, you know, basically, when push comes to shove, Biden is not doing any of this. He is just doing what he's told to be doing.
That's very true. Biden is honestly just following orders. Okay, for those who may not yet firmly grasp the concept of throwing tax dollars at the weather, let me explain. Automakers are losing big money on electric vehicles. Ford lost $36,000 per electric vehicle last year, and they can't stay in business losing that kind of money. So the government will begin to subsidize automakers to produce more electric vehicles per the new mandate, but it doesn't end there. Americans don't want electric vehicles, and a big part of that is they can't afford to buy them. So the government will subsidize auto buyers to the tune of $7,500 or more to help them buy electric cars. But that's not the end of it either. As I said, we don't have the infrastructure to handle the new electric car mandate, so the government will subsidize companies to put in more charging stations all over the country, especially in rural parts of America. Does it end there? No, of course not. There's more. Plugging your electric car into a standard household 110 outlet allows you to fully charge your car's low battery in a couple of days. Who has a couple of days to wait for a low car battery to fully charge? Nobody. So the government will subsidize homeowners to have quick chargers in their homes. Quick chargers, by the way, folks, cost an average of $12,000
to $15,000. Oh, God.
And where do the tax dollars come from for all these subsidies? Well, they come from jacking up taxes on energy companies. That's right. The Biden regime, in their latest budget proposal, will add more than $110 billion in tax hikes targeting domestic production of oil, gas, and coal, which, Diane, those companies will pass along to consumers in the effort to soak those who dare to drive a gas-powered car, cook on a gas range, or heat or cool their homes with gas or by using electricity produced by burning coal. And that's pretty much all of us, regardless of public or political, I should say, affiliation.
Well, you know what? There's a method to this madness, and it really is madness, but that madness has a specific goal that will make we Americans mad.
Well, you call it, method to the madness. I call it a grand scheme, and that is to put traditional energy companies, to put the oil, gas, and coal industries out of business in favor of wind and solar, which the government also subsidizes. But wait, the greeny weenies always scream that the government subsidizes traditional energy too, and that's true. But guess what? That's going to stop, thus hastening their demise. This is what socialism looks like. You can't build a new house unless you do it the way the government tells you to do it. You can't open a restaurant without meeting government-issued mandates. You can only drive the car the government tells you to drive, and the government tells you how you are allowed to heat and cool your home. It's called government control of your life, and you will pay the government via your tax dollars to control you, which, in case you're not paying attention, makes you reliant on the government. But wait, there's more. Another reason Obama is pulling Biden's puppet strings with his new electric vehicle mandate is to make China rich. That's right, China. Where do you think the lithium necessary for electric car batteries comes from? Comes from China. Where do the least expensive electric cars come from? China. And from what country do we get the necessary components for wind and solar power generation? China, once again. In fact, the Chinese electric vehicle maker BYD is in the process of building a plant in Mexico. And because of provisions of NAFTA, they'll be able to flood the U.S. market with mandate meeting lower cost electric cars and not have to face any tariffs to do it. Are you paying attention, automakers? Are you paying attention, UAW? Obama and his daft puppet, Biden, are about to put you out of business right along with the oil, gas, and coal industries. And what happens when those proud American jobs go away? More people than ever are forced to become reliant on the government through unemployment and welfare. And do you think those people will bite the hand that literally feeds them and clothes them? Diane, I say certainly not. They're going to vote for liberals just to survive on the scraps that are being tossed to them.
You know what? They can do whatever they want. They can propose whatever they want. They can tell us to do and say whatever they want us to do and say. But there's a big question with all of that.
There
you can't
is.
Just say do it. You have to be able to show that you can do it, and I don't know if they can.
Well, so the question becomes, will it work? Will throwing oil and gas and coal industries along with the U.S. auto workers under the bus to curry voter support from freshly indoctrinated 18 to 20-year-olds be enough to get Obama's puppet Joe Biden reelected? We had better hope not, because if the daft puppet secures Obama's fourth term, and especially if liberals also control the House and the Senate, the newly minted executive-ordered electric car mandates and all the subsidies that go along with them will be codified into law, which would literally take an act of Congress rather than the stroke of a pen to reverse. But there is good news in all of this. And that's that there are already cracks in the socialist government control plan. Last week, the state of Maine dealt a blow to the new socialist mandates. California recently mandated that at least 51% of new cars purchased there would have to be electric by 2028, and 82% would have to be by mandate electric by 2032. Well, Maine was, and I say was, going down that same road until the Maine Board of Environmental Protection came to their senses last week. Maine is primarily rural, like most of the U.S., and winters in Maine are a bitch. People know that electric batteries do not perform anywhere near the specs suggested in cold weather. Regarding the proposed environmental mandates for electric vehicles, the Maine Board of Environmental Protection recently received nearly 1,800 comments from Maine residents, and a whopping 80% or 84% of those went against the proposed mandates. It wasn't just the garden variety citizens of Maine who opposed the EV mandates, it was also stakeholders who came out against them. According to Fox News, and I quote, among the stakeholders who filed opposition letters were the American Fuel and Petrochemical Manufacturers, the Maine Automobile Dealers Association, and Democrat Maine Representative Jared Golden, who represents a largely rural congressional district, unquote. That's right, Diane. Representative Gerald Goldman, a Maine Democrat, spoke common sense to socialist power when he said, and again I quote, affordable transportation is a requirement, not a luxury, in rural Maine. Regulations must recognize reality. California-style emission standards would impose logistic and financial hurdles that Maine isn't ready to clear. The state BEP made the right decision to reject them.
Yeah. Well, they came up with a
two very unique words, maybe not so unique anymore, as to what really is the problem with all of this.
Well, climate change is not the problem, I can tell you that. Climate change has been around since the Earth was invented, and neither man nor beast had anything to do with it in the last 4.5 billion years. It's the weather. Government control is the problem. Socialist mandates that force people to be reliant on the government and put good, hardworking Americans out of business and on welfare while making our nation dependent on foreign adversaries like China are the problem.
Mm-hmm.
We should end subsidies to the green energy industry, which is actually a boon to the Chinese Communist government, and instead reinvest with vigor in our own energy production, which will drive down the cost for every American. Every wind turbine built in the United States is a 500-foot-plus feather in China's global domination cap, and every solar farm built in our country is built on land that becomes owned and operated by the Chinese Communist government. Wake up, America, and vote Republican from the top of the ballot to the bottom if you want to preserve the American way of life, including your freedom to decide how you want to live in a free market system where your personal choices aren't taken away from you by socialist government mandates. The false notion that we can change the weather, or more accurately, alter the naturally occurring eons-old climate cycles by throwing other people's money at it in order to become the next failed socialist nation, is only pushed by power-hungry Marxists and believed only by fools. Margaret Thatcher once famously said, quote, "The problem with socialism is that eventually you run out of other people's money," unquote. What then, socialist cult of climate change Marxists? What then?
Well, I guess then we become officially a third world country.
We're about a 2.5 world country right now under this Biden regime.
Yeah, that's true. We're almost there.
And these mandates, you know, mandates like this are really going to push us over the brink. I truly believe that.
Yeah. No, that's true.
You know, you've got these electric cars that are damned expensive to begin with. And, you know, while some do get sold, you've got to be pretty well off if you're going to buy one. Now, let's say you get one and 5 years from now, your car's only 5 years old. That's not very old for a car.
No, it isn't.
Your car's 5 years old and the battery has to be replaced. A new battery for one of those things costs about $12,000.
Yep.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have reinvested more money in your foolish notion that you're going to save the planet. If you don't want to wait 2 days for your dead car battery to recharge sitting in your driveway, you're going to have to put in a $12,500 quick charger. You know, I mean, this stuff gets nuts in a hurry. If you don't do any of that, your range is limited.
Now, you know, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, we keep hearing more and more about, you know, new batteries and longer ranges, but none of that has yet to be proven true. None of it has come to fruition.
Right. And the whole thing with all of this is they talk about carbon emissions. Well, they're basing everything on those two words, carbon emissions. Climate change causes carbon emissions and this and that. The problem is carbon emissions contribute to pollution, not to changes in the weather, but to pollution. Well, why don't they find a way, instead of going this ridiculous electric route, why don't they find a way to sort of clean up carbon?
Well, I mean, there are carbon capture things, and of course, there's a lot of people that
I'm not talking about that. I'm not talking about that. Put it in. Okay, when you buy a car and you put gasoline in, maybe there should be something within the
gas that removes the carbon-producing part of gas. I'm not talking about you know those silly things in the cars that don't work half the time.
I understand what you're saying, but you know,
just don't know how to explain it right now.
Remember, there is an additive in gasoline that everybody pays for when they buy gasoline.
Okay, right.
That doesn't even exist. And that was done by government mandate, too.
Exactly.
The government mandate, and I can't remember what it's called, but the government mandates that, you know, all gasoline in the United States has to include in it a certain amount of product X, whatever product X is.
Wasn't it something related to ethanol or something like that?
Yeah, but it's not ethanol. It's an additive. Okay.
Yeah.
And if the you know, petroleum industry doesn't add that, they get fined, and I mean big time fined by the U.S. government. The problem is the additive doesn't exist. But the petroleum industry, they pay the fines anyway and pass the cost of that on to the general public. So,
right.
You know, right. I mean, I understand what you're saying about an additive that would kill the carbon emissions, but again, it's going to be something that doesn't exist and we're going to wind up paying for it. So, you know,
we make it exist.
Here's something that, you know, folks, you might want to do. And I'll tell you about it in just a second. First, let me just tell you can get my commentary this week, Socialism by Green Energy Mandates, either at my blog, thenationalpatriot.com, or by going to rspradio1.com. Now, if you go to rspradio1.com, here's what else you will find if you do this in the next couple of days. I mean, you know, today is the 26th of March, and in a few days, this article will disappear because it'll drop down the feed. But if you go and look at, you know, rspradio1.com, and I think I've got it in the business section. It's either in business or it's in science. I'm not sure which. But anyway, it's either in business, science, or it's the other one I did today. History, but I don't think it's in history. Anyway, if you go look for it, you'll find it. There is an article out there right now that says the brakes on your car are probably putting more carbon out there than your exhaust pipe.
True.
Brakes are made of carbon, and every time you apply the brakes, carbon particulates come off the brake pads. And you know, this is for all those people out there that, you know, oh, we've got to have electric cars, you know, because of the carbon emissions. Well, no, it's not the carbon emissions that are causing the problem. It could be that your brakes, it's in science. Put it in science today.
Oh, okay.
The hidden danger of braking, more harmful than exhaust.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, come on. And let's be honest about this. It's the weather. Climate change occurs. It has occurred for 4.5 billion years. That's how long the world has been here. In fact, up in Alaska, in the cold reaches of Alaska, there has been a discovery that used to be a nice warm spot and dinosaurs lived there.
Oh, yes, with water and green things and all, you know, all sorts of nice things.
Yeah, and you can find that article on rspradio1.com in the history section, because the history of Alaska is a lot different than the present of Alaska. Do yourselves a favor, folks. Go to Diane's blog, thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, and get her op-ed this week, Having to Make a Solomon-like Decision in a Time of War. Go to my blog, thenationalpatriot.com. Get my commentary this week, Socialism by Green Energy Mandates, or go to rspradio1.com. You can get links to both those articles and look through the whole site.
Mm-hmm. Pretty simple. We got a lot of good things in there.
You know, and we update it every day, you know, Monday through Friday and Saturday too. And, you know, we're not going to update it this Saturday because we're on Easter break, but.
No.
You know.
Well, yeah, in a way it will be because we'll post the articles on Friday.
Are we doing that? We haven't really talked about this. You get inside RSP.
No, we did. We still have to put up.
Okay.
You know, for Friday.
Okay, so if you're bored on Saturday, go look at, see what's up there new on all the pages. Mm-hmm. But with that, Diane, why don't we call it an early night? Remember, folks, we're taking Friday off. We're taking Good Friday off. But we will be back next Tuesday.
Yes, we will. So we'll see you then. And nighty-night, folks, and have a great Easter weekend.
Folks, have yourselves a great rest of the week, a great Easter weekend. We'll be back on Tuesday. Bye-bye.